started the last podcast slightly tongue-in-cheek, reenacting the Mick McCarthy "It can't go on like this" meme. It can. Norwich City have lost again. It's got worse again. More chants, protests, the levels of toxicity being ramped up with every passing minute that was spent inside Carrow Road. A 2-0 defeat to Hull is their seventh in succession at Carrow Road. That is a new club record. It's six defeats on the spin in the Championship more broadly, seven from the last eight. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Davitt. This is the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. It's worth noting we are recording at 2 minutes past five on Saturday evening. That feels like we should make note of that, just in case we get overtaken by events in the coming hours or so. Paddy, I'm trying to think of new angles or new things to say. That was dismal again.
No, yeah, I mean, there is no new angles because, excuse me, it's the same playbook, same spectacle at Carrow Road. But with each notch on that losing sequence, which is now seven, including the League Cup against Southampton, the intensity of the reaction amongst the fans, both in scale, both in ferocity, that just grows just every game. And to the point where today, you know, you can bracket Liam Manning now in the Dean Smith and David Wagner category in terms of chants about his brand of football. I know the Bristol fans were giving him that when they came to Carrow Road recently and were one of those teams to win, but I hadn't heard that, not on that scale, from his own supporters. And of course, there was the by now customary adverse reaction towards Ben Napper and his continued role as sporting director. So, you know, and that's even before you get into, we'll gloss over a tennis ball protest, which was, I've seen more action at Wimbledon than that, to be fair, but in terms of the amount of balls on the pitch. But joking aside, the post-match for me was the response. And as, you know, as you say, Connor, we're only, you know, just walked back up the hill. But, you know, fans, again, these things are always subjective, but by all accounts, 250 gathered around the City stand at the end of the game, voicing their displeasure. And then another smaller group around the other opposite end of the ground, the South stand, maybe intent on preventing certain individuals from leaving, you know, because that's where the players and obviously the coaching staff and the executive would park their cars. So, you know, pull all those strands together. That's even before you get into sort of the events leading up to and then just after the final whistle involving Liam Manning and going down the tunnel, rather than acknowledging what would have been the inevitable barracking he would have got from home fans. It's more of the same, but this feels now almost you've tipped it. If it wasn't already beyond, you know, a tipping point, it feels very, very difficult now how those individuals who are in the line of sight can continue in post. And that's, you know, that's not to absolve another listless performance from a group of players who Liam Manning, when asked, is there a mentality issue in that dressing room? Yes. One word answer, yes. It doesn't matter seemingly which personnel he changes, and he shuffled his pack again today. There isn't the minerals in that dressing room as a collective, as individuals, when the adversity hits, barring one or two exceptions who we can all think of. There isn't enough in a group of players over and above, obviously, the failings of their head coach and the coaching staff and maybe those above them now as well. But there isn't enough in that group when they face, you know, what they faced again, because we've seen it too many times now. The killer stat being, you know, that was the seventh goal they've conceded in that arc between half-time restarting and the hour mark. You know, seven times they've conceded where in most cases they've been very well in the game, as they were today, and then something, I don't know what happens at half time, I don't know what messages are conveyed, I don't know where the focus goes, but you know, again, we saw it today. Hull reacted to, no question, Norwich were the better team. All the stats, bar the obvious one, the goal scoreline, would tell you Norwich were the better team in that first half. So, of course, that prompts a reaction from their head coach. He changed the shape. He made a personnel change. Ditto, Swansea this time last Saturday at half-time. Derby. You could go on. Yep. And that seemingly is enough to bamboozle Liam Manning, his coaching staff, and that group of players, because they're never able to seemingly respond. And that type of stat underlines that. And of course, then we see the pattern when they do concede. Collectively, the head goes, wheels come off, Wrexham here, 3 goals in 13. It wasn't quite as bad as that, but it could have been, because it was literally domination from Hull in terms of the flow of that second half. And some very, very near misses, or it could have been even more goals conceded. And precious little at the other end, there was one or two chances. Schwartau had another good chance, as he did in the first half. But it's sadly a story and a script we've seen endlessly now under this head coach. And that is why, despite what he now feels a very dated public appearance from Mark Attanasio in recent days, it feels like it's gone beyond that. And the league table makes horrendous reading. In terms of A, they're in the bottom three, of course, but B, that the increasingly bigger gaps now opening up to teams, and we're not talking teams in mid-table, teams in 16th, 17th.
Well, they were before we made our way up the hill. We've not been able to digest all of the full results yet, so the league table might look different, but they were at one stage this afternoon, 9 points off 17th. Staggering. Yeah. It is absolutely staggering.
It is. But what's that, 6 straight defeats?
Yeah.
So 18 points to play for in Championship football. They haven't took one. I mean, that, you know, it's negligence, really.
What is it they say about insanity? Because that kind of feels like where we are, isn't it?
I've said it a few times on this podcast. You know, you keep doing the same things. That's the definition of madness. Doing the same things, expecting a different outcome. Today was interchange Hull with Derby, interchange it with Bristol, interchange it with Wrexham. And go on and on and on. You know, we see the same failings off the pitch, on the pitch, irrespective of who the personnel are on the pitch. And what that leaves is now a sense of a club that's broken. And it's we take no pleasure in sitting here and endlessly discussing and navel-gazing about the state of affairs at this football club. Mark Attanasio would have got a sense of that from the fans who did appear on that Canary Call hour during the week, but if he had been in Cairo this afternoon, then I think it would have been graphically illustrated that it's not one or two, it's not a section of the ground, it's all four corners of that stadium now, young and old, have had enough, and they're not buying that the status quo is a remedy for turning around a season which at the moment ends in League One.
Yeah, as I was making my way down to the mix zone post-game, I had four or five fans that came over to me, one of them, and all, by the way, who just, you know, wanted to express their opinion and speak about what they thought was the state of their football club at this moment in time. One of them was I hope I'm not being disrespectful here, but an older gentleman who'd been at Carrow Road for a long period of time, and he was making the point he travels from Newmarket every week, and actually that love for it, that connection with it, has faded, and that's really sad. And that obviously went on to speak about lots of other things. Made some excellent points in terms of, you know, why when you've got a £6 million winger on the bench, you bring on a youth academy graduate for his senior debut. Very, very fair point, I think, and reflects on clearly their recruitment. And we've been over that. We're covering a lot of the old ground. We could probably as much as the performances, press pause on one podcast, play on the other, and go again. So, yeah, I think you mentioned it, Paddy, protests before the game, after the game in more numbers. There were incidents outside the South Stand of the car park being blocked and players not being able to get out. Like you say, four corners who are just completely furious about the state of their football club, rightly so. Lots of people had left before the final whistle. We had a chance of you're not fit to wear the shirt directed at the players, sack the board, Ben Napper out. Those comments you make at Liam Manning, the word you use there is broken. And it feels like that. Everywhere you turn, everywhere you look, I've used this analogy before, but you kind of spin round and it's just like everything is on fire. And that fundamentally, forget about the state that it's in at the moment. It's how on earth do they go about fixing that? And I'm not sure we have the answers. I'm not sure they have the answers. Yeah, it's just a very, very sad state of affairs at the moment.
It is. And, it isn't all on any one individual, be that Napper, be that Manning, Webber, whoever. You know, this is a collective failure. And, maybe this has been coming down the track and it predates maybe even Attanasio coming in. It predates Manning coming in. It maybe even predates Napa, because it, by no manner of means was it rosy in the garden sort of post Farker's departure. It's, you know, really been a downward spiral ever since. And I know they got into the playoffs under Wagner, but they might well have not bothered how uncompetitive they were in those two tussles with Leeds. And I think that was off the back for me, really, rather than the coach. It was the goals of Josh Sargent, and it was the brilliance of Gabby Zara, so, and John Rowe maybe chipping
Angus
in.
Gunn probably is before
Angus Gunn. So, you know, I don't think that necessarily was a coaching feat. It was more in spite of, because as we know, the backdrop to the second part of that top six season was a very clear sense that Napa wasn't having Wagner, Wagner wasn't having Napa, and Wagner maybe very skillfully, to give him his due, used that almost to create a siege mentality inside the dressing room that will prove people inside the club wrong as much as those outside. And it worked to a point, got him in the top six, but let's not kid ourselves, it has felt as if it's a downward spiral of decline on and off the pitch, and so many episodes that would you could bring to bear to show that this, and the word gets used a lot, but this disconnect now with the fan base, that they don't feel they're being listened to, they don't feel their concerns are being acknowledged. Maybe they are being acknowledged, but not acted upon.
And well, almost confidence,
almost
they?
Almost in, they're being talked at rather than, you know, and to bring it right up to date, that in terms of the Carrow Road revamp delivery farce was the case. And you know, a project which wasn't involved proper engagement and communication with those who mattered has now been paused, as Mark Attanasio announced. So, you know, for me, that in microcosm maybe sums up where we are between fan base and club. They're on opposite sides, and it's not obviously all the fan base, because, you know, it's never universal, these things. Likewise, it's not universal. We're not saying from top to bottom in that football club it's rotten and it needs, you know, it needs detonating, but equally it is them and us at the moment. I think if you're an external looking at it, it feels them and us, what it should always be, what it has been in the best times in modern history that I can recall, is a unity of purpose and a unity of fans, players, staff, all the other constituencies on board chasing the same common goal. You know, that it feels very disparate, and, you know, it feels to me that there's maybe people with their own agendas inside that football club who aren't necessarily all on the same page. And that cohesion that you need to fight your way through a championship, which is now increasingly difficult to get out of. Well, Norwich are managing to achieve that, it would seem, but in, unfortunately, the opposite direction, which is they will be exiting by the back door. And that then is a whole different world and landscape that that club will be heading to, if the end goal under Attanasio, as he restated midweek, is to get to the Premier League. I'm pretty sure when he first took over March of last year, he didn't envisage a stopover in League One, but that is very much what awaits if this doesn't change. And some may argue it's probably too far gone already now. You know, you look at it, you look at this group of players, that, as Liam Manning said post-match this afternoon, that group of players isn't changing between now and the January window. Even when the January window comes around, we know what a very difficult trading window that is. You can't radically alter.
Who's going to want to come in?
The personnel, that as well, yeah, exactly. And they'd have to shift players as well. That's the nature of it, because they're top-heavy with players as it is now. So anybody thinks January is the cure for all ills should think again. So this group of players,
it could be well adrift by then as well.
Yeah,
you know, it's already 4 points.
And it's quite feasible. It's more likely that scenario than the alternative under the current direction of travel. So, you know, that's why it's very hard at this stage to even 13. It seems ridiculous, 13 games in, but 13 games into a season, it already looks like it might be beyond them. It certainly feels, and again underlined today, beyond this group of players and this head coach. So how does it change?
Yeah, well, if we do the maths, I mean, it takes what? I don't know the exact, I think it's probably less than this, but typically when I can't even believe we're having this conversation, but typically you look at 50 points, don't you, in the Championship as the benchmark. If you can get there, you're likely safe. Not always, because I think a couple of clubs have gone with 50. I remember Peterborough United going down with 50 once, so it's not an absolute guarantee, but more often than not, if you get 50 points, there's an absolute minimum. That's typically enough to keep you in the league. Norwich are going to need, they're going to need to go over a point a game at this stage to get that. They need, 42 points from 33 games. They're going to have to go over a point a game to get to 50. Mm. I just at the moment it's difficult to see where that's going to come from. And to pick up on kind of a couple of points you said there, and you mentioned it earlier around diversity in this group, I wouldn't even say it's, you know, a push in terms of diversity. It's just a very light blow of wind where, you know, a door's not been shut properly, and that's enough seemingly to blow them off course. It's remarkably brittle. And then, yeah, like you say, it's and you can understand why that fan base at the moment is completely furious. And for me, the towards the end, and obviously you can go and watch Liam Manning's press conference on our channels. Tony Rushmer, who's at most Norwich games, journalist for a different organisation, asked a question around, not just, you know, do you think this group is good enough to stay up? Do you think this group is good enough? You might have to help here, but it was basically, well, you know,
handsomely, yeah.
Yeah, handsomely stay up. And his answer was, I don't know about handsomely, but he's definitely good enough to stay up. It's a remarkable thing to say, isn't it, about this group of players and where they're at this moment in time, for a group that was assembled on £55 million, where the objective clearly stated by the club in the summer was to finish in the top six. You look at the maths behind it, the comments behind it, the eye test behind it, it's staggering. And that in a division as well, where maybe that sense of opportunity has never been greater, because you look at the performances of Leicester, who got beat again by Blackburn, which doesn't help Norwich City out, and Southampton were losing to Preston as well. I must confess, again, don't know how that finished. But
who scored for Preston?
Lewis Dobbin.
Did he?
Yeah, he did. Oh, yeah. Some player, him, I think. So
was he here last season?
I think he might have been. Yeah, I think they might have even had a first refusal on him and opted not to go in that direction. But yeah, all of those stuff, Paddy, presents a from a footballing perspective, a very grave picture of where they are in the here and now.
Oh yeah, I mean it's. You know, the warning lights are now flashing and the sirens are going full beam because, as you said there, you know, over a point a game from here, just to actually be in with a chance of survival, it's not happening. It's not happening under this manager and this group of players, or this sporting director, maybe. So are they already now countenancing the nightmare scenario, which is League One? And if so, who do they feel is best equipped to drive this forward in terms of this side of the operation or organisation, as Mark called it? Because it won't be from his side of the pond. He reiterated again in his midweek touch point that, you know, he doesn't want to be hands-on. He doesn't feel he has the footballing knowledge to be hands-on, you know, and that's, you know, that self-awareness is a good thing, I think, rather than having interference from ownership, because you've seen where that leads to in a lot of case studies in English football. But equally, that policy and that strategy requires capable, competent people with track records of delivering. And you know, he was at pains to put the case forward for the people who are in those posts at the minute. But you know, as I say, within the space of 3-4 days and 90 minutes, that feels again like that the reality is somewhat very different and very much a jarring. Alternate reality, because, you know, would the majority of Norwich fans now be content or happy or confident with Ben Napper driving another transfer window? You have to be honest and say no on the evidence of the windows he's had thus far, the outlay you referenced. After a sixth straight defeat, 7 Carrow Road defeats, first derby loss in 16 years...
You've also got the fact that...
Do you want Liam Manning?
Well, I'll throw a couple of more damning stats in. Millwall hadn't won here in about 50 years. Hull hadn't won here since 2010, and I think that was their only win since the 70s. All of these records, they are records that are broken in a negative sense by teams that, unfortunately, ultimately get relegated.
Which is where this group are heading, and this football club is heading. And, you know, it's staggering. On one level, it's
quite impressive.
Yeah, it is to be this far off it in terms of where the benchmark was this early into the season takes some doing, actually. So, you know, but it is hard now as we sit here, having been in that stadium, having listened to the most important people in all of this, as always, the fan base, on the volume, on the scale of the, it wasn't, you know, one or two. The tennis balls thing might have been one or two, but the actual fury directed at Napper, directed at Manning, which he didn't help himself with his actions at the final whistle, which we'll get into. But you know, broadening out more broadly to the executive as well, to those players, you know, plenty of bars of you're not fit to wear the shirt during the game and after the game. You know, that to come from this position now and stay up, I think it's going to be very difficult.
And if you, it's certainly without anything changing, absolutely. I think for me, period in that second half, I almost kind of went back to last year's game against Hull. If you remember, Norwich won that 4-0. It was perhaps one of the most impressive, more impressive performances under Johannes Hovtorup. There was a clear identity, there was a clear direction. It wasn't perfect, and I certainly wouldn't try and paint that picture, nor did it go from a state of being perfect towards the end. It was anything but by that Millwall game on Easter Monday, where then ultimately it was his final one in charge
no
and moved on.
That was no bad than what we're seeing here now.
No, that's what I'm saying. You think
Easter
about...
Monday defeat was no defensively in terms of structure and individual collective errors. We've seen that and then some in this Manning.
But that to an extent is my point. To go from where they were against Hull in the same fixture last season, to go even where they were from Easter Monday to where they are now is absolutely staggering. It's breathtaking.
Not in a good way either. And, you know, we're sat here and we do have the benefit of hindsight, and we don't have the pressure that comes with making those decisions in real time. Of course, that's a given. But it's not looking a good decision now, is it? To get Torup out the door and bring Manning in. And that's obviously allowing for the fact that it may have turned negatively, or it continued along this path, to be fair, with Torup from the back end of last season. There's no guarantees. But I think having identified maybe what the issues were, I think if they'd have backed him to the extent that Manning was backed in this past summer, given the fundamentals that he had built there, in terms of on the ball and the attacking element of it, it is hard to think that they would be sat here with Johannes Hovtorup as the head coach. What would that be? Sort of a season and a half into his tenure, and then would be 23rd in the table. It's very difficult to construct an argument that would have been the case.
I just think, and this ultimately, I guess, is probably where a lot of fans are at as well. If you're a sporting director, I kind of think you need to live and die by your idea and by your principles and by your beliefs. And if you go to the point of where Ben Napper came in charge or was appointed, did lots of club media, spoke about the style of play that he wanted in terms of, I think he said, I'm quite a purist. I want to see teams that attack and are proactive. This Norwich team is anything but that. I think it's really difficult. We're 13 games in, and I've had, you know, when you're in the job, you get kind of contacted by people of opposition coming up, and they'll ask you questions, you know, what's the style of play, how do they play? And in a lot of those, I've just kind of got, I really don't know. I don't know how they play or what they try and do. And you saw it again today. They flip between a four and a three. You know, he's thrown in, and again, this isn't with hindsight, two defenders, Shane Duffy and Rory McConville, who haven't played a single minute of football this season. You know, Park Championship football. They've not even appeared in the cup competitions.
It wasn't when Conville played against Southampton.
Did he? Okay, yeah. So he might have played against Southampton, but hasn't played any Championship football. Yeah. In that team selection. A really good aspect in recent weeks has been Kenny McLean at left back and some of the balls that he's been able to play forward as a result of that. There's been very few things to kind of cling on to, but that's been one of them. That was kind of stripped out to push him back into midfield. You know, Norwich have looked best this season when they've played with Sargent and McCarmer as a two. We saw him again sort of behind Sargent in more of a right-sided role. There's footballing questions as well to this that you ask yourself in terms of lineup, but yeah, again, just to go from where they were in terms of that direction, where it did feel like it might not have been the right idea, it might not, as you said, panned out well, but at least there was a semblance of an idea here. Not really sure what this idea is at this moment in terms of what they are trying to achieve and the style of which they are trying to approve it achieve it in either. And I think from a fan base perspective, when you don't recognise that, you don't recognise the identity and plan, there's not really anything then from a substance perspective to get behind. It's all built on hope then, isn't it? And it's kind of, yeah, glass mirrors, because when it does fall down, I think you end up here, because nobody's really idea what the identity is, what the idea is, and you get a group that just looks like they are pretty listless, pretty rudderless, and pretty poor structurally.
Well, I said it pretty much on the team news. You look at that lineup, primarily midfield forward areas, they're just functional footballers. Mm. There's no creativity there. There's no anybody who can see pictures or execute, you know, something that is progressive and off the cuff, beating players. Threading the right service through to Sargent. It's just, stodgy football. And to be honest, the first 45 minutes, that at least that was a clear pattern of what they were trying to do. You could see what they were trying to do. There was a sort of interchanging with Mattson and McLean. There was runners beyond Sargent. We've not seen that enough. You know, Schwartau did it a few times and McLean broke forward. The service into Sargent, I felt, was better. You know, it was balls maybe fired in on the floor from sort of wider areas, Schlupp and Fisher, and then Sargent could turn out. And then, you know, there was a couple of occasions he got Schlupp in on the overlap. You know, that whistle at half-time goes, and yes, still lacking the clinical intent, still not being able to take the chances they created, still probably in general play not enough that you'd want to see. It was a bit more reliance on set pieces again. But, okay, there was something there where the players looked like they understood what they were being asked to do. But, as I say, they re-emerged. They concede in really, really poor fashion. I think he even said, Manning, you know, I don't want to insult schoolboy footballers, but labelled it as schoolboy defending.
That's, and Norwich have conceded some horror goals in the last year. That tops it.
Well, yes. There's some good candidates, though, but to go on that list. But I said to Manning after the game, I don't want to single out Harry Darling, but first goal today, first goal on Saturday last week at Swansea, a ball into the channel, and he just can't get close enough to the forward. He looks a shell of the player who first walked in the door. And he is symptomatic of where this has gone. You know, that Manning isn't improving these players. If anything, they're regressing under him and his coaching staff. And that's not all on Manning. That's obviously the players have to take some responsibility. But that environment is actually sucking whatever quality there was in this squad out of it, to the point where, you know, you see that team sheet before the game and you just think, it's going to be more meh type football, you know. Yeah. There's not going to be anything to get anybody if you're a fan off your seat and excited by what you see. And for all Torup's limitations in certain areas, granted, nobody was ever accusing his football of being an unedifying spectacle. I don't ever recall any Norwich fan rounding on him for the brand of football. So at least there was something there to build out from. As he moved forward and understood what English football and the Championship was all about, had another recruitment cycle. You know, it's increasingly, we've talked about this, increasingly the parallel is, you know, when Webber pivoted from Farker to Dean Smith initially. You know, it was the end of the project. It was the end of the philosophical voyage of trying to do something slightly different, slightly out of the box, slightly more of an identity type of approach to... we'll swim with the rest of the tide and maybe we'll sort of, you know, we'll play more in the margins of, you know, we'll get a tried and trusted formula from a head coach and functional players. And maybe that's just Norwich fans per se. You get this sense that some head coaches are a perfect fit, some players are a perfect fit for a club and its fan base and what they've been brought up on. I don't think Norwich fans, in my experience, relish necessarily the type of football that they've been served up by Manning, by Wagner, by Smith, because, you know, you almost hold your nose with the results when they come your way, but the actual entertainment value and the sense you're watching something that, you know, you can really enthuse you as a fan, I don't think we've had that since Farker, let's be honest, bar that purple spell when Thorup first came in, you know, August, September, October, until the injuries bit and then the squad deficiencies were exposed, and then he obviously ran into his own issues maybe around man management of players and certain situations, you know, all came in on him really. But it's been a long time since, you know, as a fan maybe you went to Carrow Road and was excited about the product you were going to see on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that Webber example. I'd go back probably even further to that first season where Daniel Farkas, Norwich City, finished 14th below Ipswich Town, but also a place below where Johannes Hovtorup finished in his first season at Norwich. Now, I'm not saying that what would have come would have been Farkas' second season and Torup would have gone on to take Norwich to those heights. But for me, the parallel is towards the back end of that season. I think Farker had won two games in 14, maybe. It was a pretty dismal run. They, of course, lost on the final day 5-1, didn't they, at Sheffield Wednesday. James Maddison had gone off. There was a feeling that he was going to be sold. They lost basically their three top goal scorers, I think, in that season. There was, again, similar soundings that maybe he wasn't the best commander of a dressing room, that the senior players maybe weren't that pleased with some of the training schedules. That was littered throughout the season. They even had a poor start to the next season where I think it was it one win in the first six, and he felt really on the edge against Ipswich. But The difference is Stuart Webber stuck by him and stuck by the idea and the you know, the concept of what they were trying to build. Ben Napper, in very similar circumstances, didn't, and that pivot ultimately is has probably resulted in Norwich being where they are. And that's not to say they wouldn't be here, but I think there's almost a loss of purity, isn't there, now? And I think if you'd have almost been in this situation with Torup, I think he probably would have then got another chance to go again and try and pivot and almost redesign himself. If this fails, and it looks like it's going to, it's going to be, I think, near on impossible for him to come back from. And that, yeah, that choice and that decision, and I'm not even sure it was necessarily with the benefit of hindsight, because I think some of these issues we were talking about before, yeah, it just feels maybe symptomatic for the last few years of where Norwich City have been and found themselves, which ultimately is in continued regression. You look at, you know, even the last four managers. I think Norwich were fifth when Dean Smith went. They were sixth, obviously, when David Wagner went. They were 13th when Johannes Hoftorp went. Sacking managers in that constant regression has pulled them down as well. But I don't think that's necessarily the act of sacking them. I think it's the constant flip-flop in direction and in identity and in messaging. And that, as you said earlier, has spanned sporting directors. It's spawned ownership. And the reality is, if you are a football club and you continue to make poor decisions over a long period of time, you're going to regress. You're going to fall down the tables and the leagues, and all of those issues that have borne, not just today, not just against Hull City, not just in this defeat, but over the last 2, 3, 4 years, that maybe at points have been covered by sticking plasters and by wins and bursts of form, feels like the whole thing's been ripped off. And actually, we've got to stay, go back to Ralph Raniak at Man United. It feels like it kind of needs open heart surgery now, doesn't it, to it? And that is a really sad state of affairs that Norwich City have got themselves in. Part two, we'll be talking about Liam Manning. We'll obviously talk about some of that Attanasio media that, again, feels very out of date. And we'll be trying to look ahead to what on earth comes next at Norwich City. Stay with us. Welcome back, everybody, to your weekly therapy session in regards to Norwich City. It feels like another defeat, 6 on the bounce for the Canaries today against Hull. I think there's almost this kind of myth that Norwich City spin on you in matches, where, as we've discussed, for the first 45 minutes, you sit there, you sit back in your chair and you go, that wasn't too bad, actually. They're in this game, they're competitive. And then whatever happens in the second half just seems to disintegrate and they seem to regress within games. And that ultimately is what cost them today against Hull, a very good first half where they could have quite feasibly have been 3-0 up. And maybe that's indicative of itself, of where they are. They weren't. They didn't punish Hull. And in the second half, two really soft goals to condemn them to another defeat. And Paddy, let's go to the end of the game, because typically what we've been expected to see at Carrow Road after the game is you have the kind of rituals of handshaking and all that stuff, and then the players parade. I'd like to say it's a lap of honour, but too often it's been a lap of dishonour this season around the pitch. And they appreciate and I guess have to soak up what comes their way in terms of performances. And in 6 out of 7 of those instances this season, Liam Manning and his assistant Chris Hogg have been at the front. They've owned that. They've fronted up to it. There was, to be fair, it wasn't as, they didn't get far into, quite aptly maybe, they didn't quite get far into the box in terms of that Bristol City game, but it was still done, it was still performed, and you have to own it and you have to kind of front up to it. That wasn't the case today. Liam Manning shook hands with his opposite number. He went on the pitch and shook hands with the referee, and then he followed his assistant Chris Hogg immediately down the tunnel. Fans picked up on that. There were chants after the game of Manning, where are you, along those lines. It was something he subsequently apologised for in his post-match press conference. I don't know about you. Look, we've obviously dealt with Liam Manning pretty closely since he's been Norwich head coach. I don't necessarily think we need to caveat every conversation with this, because we've said it, but I think he's a good guy. I think he's been good to deal with so far, and he's been understanding as to why you and why me and why other people have had to ask the questions that we have in some difficult moments, and he's been pretty good, I would say, at kind of fronting up in difficult moments. And if you are a head coach, it's your job to do that. I just think it's a struggle when you are somebody like him, who talks so readily about behaviours and what you want your players to show in moments of adversity, that at a point where you're going to get stick and you almost have to own that, you head off the pitch. That's not a great look, I don't think, for Norwich City's head coach tonight.
I don't think he'll come back from that, if I'm honest. He labelled it poor. That was the word he used. He did then subsequently apologise.
And I think as well, sorry to interject, but I think we are in a world where apologies do have to mean something. We do have to take, I know people will say, oh, well, it's not enough to apologise. Well, at least he kind of has taken some accountability for it. And I think we should take that as genuine. But it doesn't take away from the act itself, I would say, which I think was the point you were going on to make before I rudely interjected.
No, you're fine. No, it was, yeah, I mean, he knew. He went on to talk about it was born out of frustration, which he clearly shares with the fan base, probably more so because he's living this 24/7. You can't escape it. You know, people are looking to him and he's not delivering, so he must feel he's letting himself down. Although he went on to say, more broadly in that press conference again, you know, that he can go home, he can look in the mirror and he can feel, okay, well, I'm giving absolutely everything. It's not working, clearly. But, you know, he isn't shortchanging anybody, least of all himself. But he will know, and I think he acknowledged that straight away when I put it to him, that that was the wrong message, that was the wrong signal, both to his fan base, who by the time they trooped round to the Barclay were definitely giving him some serious stick about that. Where was he? But also to his players. And that's the point maybe you're making there, that he talks liberally about behaviours and stepping forward and owning it.
Showing responsibility.
Yeah, well, he didn't do any of that in that scenario. So if you're wanting players to come with you on this journey, you need to stand four square with them. So, you know, I thought when I saw it, we saw it actually happen in real time, that it might have been a response to maybe stewarding or security had told him maybe it's in the best interests of everybody that you just get yourself down the tunnel here, because this is very toxic, as we could sense once the second goal went in from there to the final whistle. But no, he didn't hide behind that or any other mitigation. It was very much, you know, that was wrong from him. He understood that was wrong and he apologised for his act. So, but as I say, very difficult to come back from that. And that's only one microcosm element of where Liam Manning as Norwich head coach isn't working. But, you know, as I also said to him in that post-match, how do you possibly get a ever larger constituency of fans back on side when things like that are happening off the back of what's not happening on the pitch? And, you know, he couldn't really, I don't felt, give an answer that was, you know, anything other than, well, yeah, it is too far gone. And he certainly looked very dejected again today. His general demeanour in his post-match talked about further discussions would be required, things that aren't working, things that need to change. So, yeah, it's just that really encapsulated where maybe where Liam Manning and Norwich and Norwich's fan base are at the moment, and that's definitely not on the same page.
Yeah, and it goes back to the point you were making earlier, doesn't it, about the general us and them element to, exactly, to this. And I think for me as well, if I was a player in that dressing room, I think I would be disappointed, I think. And I can't speak for them. And again, I don't want to make a big thing of it, because again, if Liam Manning goes round and he claps the fans, does that make everything better? No, of course it doesn't. But like you say, it's the optics, isn't it, of standing with them and being with them, irrespective of how it's going or even necessarily how you feel towards that group. And I recognise what he says in terms of he didn't want to antagonise the fans, but he kind of did that anyway in terms of, you know, so obviously heading down the tunnel. And yeah, I think for the players as well, that feels difficult in terms of, as you say, what he is asking them to do. You have to lead by example as well, don't you? And you know, he's a human being. We make mistakes. It's a highly emotional game. You have to throw all of that in. So I can understand it from his perspective. But I think he recognised it was the wrong thing to do. I think that sense will probably grow in the hours that come, you would imagine.
Yeah, and it can't be undone now. It's there. And he'll have to wear that, you know. You know, it may be overtaken by events from this point. So, you know, but it's sad that, you know, I think he has gone out of his way from minute one, and we know about the sort of the Bongi connection born in Norwich, which he never really embraced and wanted to make too much play of, but it was there, and I think that did establish an early connection with the fan base. And, you know, I remember stood touchline Portsmouth and said to him about, you know, about the away fans that day at Fratton Park chanting, you know, Super Liam Manning and, you know...
How long ago does that feel, by the way?
And I think he actually tongue-in-cheek, maybe now the way this panned out, said, well, yeah, for now kind of thing. But there was that connection, and there was a sense that from that fan base, certainly the travelling support, that we like this guy, we like what he's about, we like how he carries himself and what he's trying to bring to this football club and this group of players. And again, for it to unravel from that point to this, where he's now, you know, firmly offside, I think it's safe to say, with a large section of the fan base. And not just to reiterate on the events of what happened at full time, but it's, you know, you're a season ticket at Carrow Road, you don't go to the away games for whatever reason. You have seen that team, you've paid your money, and you've given that time and dedication to go and make, you know, make that your end point on a Saturday afternoon. You've seven times you've gone this season, seven times that team has lost, and the way they're playing as well, the repeatable errors that you're seeing as well, he is accountable for that. That's the word we heard a lot from Mark Attanasio, accountability. Park Ben Napa, Park recruitment, Park fitness and recovery of players, major issues there, we all know that. But he is responsible for the end product on the pitch. And seven times at Carrow Road, he's been found wanting, and his players have been found wanting. So, you know, I think this episode at the final whistle, it's doesn't help, but a lot of the damage has already been done, really, in terms of him and his status, I think, with the fan base. And that, you know, to backtrack from the final whistle, the chants that were being directed at him and his brand of football, that tells you that's the case.
Yeah, and I guess, look, and as we said in every podcast and every show that we've done this season, it doesn't start and end with him. It's not remove Liam Manning, put someone else in, off you go. There are bigger issues here. I think Norwich fans have seen that chance for Ben Napper, sat the board, which I think, I know they're singing sat the board, but I'm interpreting that as meaning the exec team, because obviously a lot of the board includes the American ownership. Is there any way that this can turn I guess, to the extent where you do build some of that? Because I'm really struggling beyond them winning like 10 games in a row. And even then, you know, Wagner kind of, he didn't win 10 games in a row, but it was a really good run they went on. And even towards the back end of that season, Norwich fans, or some Norwich fans, a constituency of, weren't having him. So if that was the case then, how on earth, I mean, it would be a hell of a story if they managed to get anything back from this stage. But for not just Liam Manning, but for all of them, is this, and maybe we're even beyond that point, but it kind of feels like the point of no return, really, as far as that fan base are concerned. Is, you know, often we've done these pods and it's been the snake pit chanting, or it's been the Barkley in the snake pit. Yeah. Today it was all four corners. It was South Stand, it was River End, calling for those people to go. That is, you know, if we were in political realms, that's as close to a vote of no confidence as you can get.
It is, but I mean, you know, you talked about fans who you met on the walk down from the press box. I mean, there was a fan there who sits just in front of us at the final whistle, and she was saying, well, you know, are they going to listen to the reaction there at the final whistle? Because, you know, referencing Mark's sort of touch point where it felt like he was saying, look, the status quo, you know, I've only been in terms of overall charge, him and his, you know, family and Norfolk Holdings since March of this year. And he wanted, I think he referenced 12 months to get a handle on, right, OK, this is where we need to go. Well, roll that on to March of next year, then with the current people in charge this side of the water, then what is there to inspire any confidence that there will be some sort of, you know, Lazarus-like recovery on the pitch, off the pitch? And that, you know, they'll be sailing to calmer waters. It feels like it's probably only going to get worse from here.
It's more Monty Python, isn't it? Tis but a flesh wound, or whatever it is, with the knight.
Indeed, yeah. And the life of Mark, yeah, if we're going to labour the Monty Python references. But you say, as the point of no return been reached, I think it has, and probably not even today. I think it felt like that, you know, previous games, really. But, you know, okay, once Mark's come out and spoken in the terms that he did during the week, and, you know, you think, well, that's going to buy Ben Napper, that's going to buy Liam Manning some time. But when you pitch up again at Carrow Road and the same thing happens again today, that similar playbook with the same ending, and then you see the reaction straight off the bat, you know, you know, it just tells you that the patience, collective patience of that fan base has ran out. because it was all four sides of the ground, directed primarily at Ben Napper at that point. But yeah, I mean, the parallels with Dean Smith and how that tenure unravelled, you know, because once it got to the point where his brand of football was being questioned on the scale it was, like today, you're in the end game then, and it's just how it plays out from here and what the final steps look like before there's an inevitable sort of change. But obviously now in this scenario, it's just, well, is it just Liam Manning, or does it have to be bigger than Liam Manning? And then if it is, what does that look like? You know, we've already seen a certain former chief operating officer who was in attendance this afternoon in Ben Kensel in the director's box.
Interesting that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it really is. Yeah, yeah, it strikes me there might be more to it than he just fancied taking in a game of football. But, you know, a lot of wheels would have to turn, really, if that was to come to pass. But, you know, it you get the sense, and obviously what we do, you know, you have to talk to various actors who are closer to it than we are. And, you know, it feels like there maybe are plates shifting inside that executive, inside that board dynamic, that maybe don't envisage this being led by Napper, led by Weber. And but it's really it's what does the speed of that look like now? I don't think there can be any debate now that this isn't working. But it's what comes next, and who is tasked with shaping what comes next, over and above obviously Mark Attanasio and his ownership group setting the direction of travel. But they are, as to reiterate, you know, they are very hands off, backseat driving, if you wish. And if that is the case, then they're going to need people front and centre who have that experience. And particularly now, you know, to pick this up from where it is now, you're going to need to have some really good operators if it is change is what is now going to happen over the coming period. Because this, very much in the first part of this now, is a steady the ship job. It's nothing more than that. Steady the ship, stave off relegation, and then they'll have to go again, you know, in terms of another cycle, aiming upwards rather than looking over their shoulder, which is exactly where they are now. And they're in a scrap and they're in a fight. And, you know, sporting director in post for the first time. A lot of unproven players getting their first brush, or at most their second brush of the championship for the first time. And, you know, even if you want to sort of broaden it out to those concerns around fitness and recovery and rehab of players, you know, some of those people in those positions for the first time in terms of seniority, you know, what is there to inspire any confidence now? If you're one of those Norwich fans who vocalised your displeasure today at Carrow Road, are you going to be convinced that the same actors staying in position rights this ship? I don't think so.
Yeah, it goes back to that definition of madness that we gave earlier. Head of recruitment as well in the role for the first time. And look, I'm not saying that people being in the role for the first time is a bad thing, because very successful people have to be a first time in a role at some point. Exactly, that's the point, isn't it? It's across the board. Executive director, of course, as well, that maybe hasn't had that seniority before, although it's always worth saying that Zoe Weber, very well respected in football generally. And I guess this is a nice segue into the Mark Attanasio media that he did, speaking with fans on, when was it, Wednesday night now, about where Norwich City find themselves and the state of affairs. He was unequivocal in terms of the way that he backed Liam Manning and kind of used the compared it to financing, didn't it, in terms of it's been a bad first quarter, but doesn't necessarily mean the second quarter is going to be as bad. Might need to revisit that. But he was for me, and this was my takeaway, less clear in terms of his support and less vocal of his support of Ben Napper and Zoe Weber. I mean, to come over, he described the Nunez stuff as an own goal, the stadium redevelopment stuff. He's come over and visibly put on pause, which is within itself a kind of, I don't want to use the word undermining, but it is a pushback against the way that's been executed. That's two pretty, you know, that's one big flagship policy that has been the case off the pitch for Zoe Weber. Anthony Richens has clearly led on it as well. But then, you know, kind of questioned very early on about the execution in terms of their summer recruitment. All of that stuff is pretty damning for those two guys ultimately who take responsibility for those things.
I think it is undermining. I think it is. I think if I'm Ben Napper or Zoe Weber, then I feel that he has more or less called me out that I'm not doing the job that he wants me to do. That's the top and bottom of it, because they are big ticket policy areas that they have direct responsibility for, and the owner, their boss, effectively has said, "No, I don't think you got that right. I don't agree. I don't back those decisions." But because, going back to what we've said liberally on this podcast and others, you know, that's his style at the moment, certainly, until he gets a complete handle on it. He empowers them, he trusts them in the first place, and he wants them to live up to that effectively. You know, you didn't mention with Napa as well. I think it's worth pointing out that he also, you know, made it quite clear they'd had an outside audit on the recovery of players and the rehabbing, and the results were not very favourable in terms of where they lie in the Championship. Well, we put that to Ben Napa last summer. This isn't a new thing. He said, yeah, no, that is justifiable, that criticism. And we're going to do an audit and we're going to have a look under the bonnet and we're going to put processes in place to address that.
I've had to do a second one 3 months later.
Here we are. Yeah. And Liam Manning has broken ranks on that particular one, you know, post Anis Ben Slimani's injury reveal, when he said, look, it's not right. You know, things need to change. And I've had some harsh words about that internally. And, you know, but that ultimately, the trail of that leads to Ben Napa's door. So you could argue that effectively what Marco Attanasio is calling into question is his recruitment ability and also his ability to put in place structures and processes and people to keep these very expensive assets that they've purchased fit, healthy, available. Yes, of course you'll get injuries. Of course there'll be unavoidable injuries. It's the volume of, as he said, muscular injuries. Something isn't right. Something is not right in terms of how they are managing players, recovering them, the workload maybe that they're being asked to do.
Well, you made this point pre-game, sorry. Lucien Mahovo, where's he gone? That was 10 days ago and we haven't heard. Ben Crisene's had another setback. Liam Gibbs has got another hamstring issue again, which has been an area that he suffered from. Again, we don't know if that's directly related, but it's another muscle injury. It's a huge bit of concern. That being said, and I sort of wrote my column on this, I've kind of sort of asked myself, well, is this injury situation as bad as they had last year, where, you know, Gunn missed, I think, 13-odd games, Nunez missed 14 games, Sergeant. Kenny McLean missed a big block of games, Sargent missed a big block of games. I think there was over 17 different midfield combinations that Johannesov tore up had. He had a period of the season, different periods, but where he was without his frontline number one, without his frontline number nine, without his frontline central midfielder, midfielders, plural, defensively as well. Norwich haven't really had that. I mean, Bristol City came here a couple of weeks ago and had Zach Viner in central midfield and won the game, and he probably looked a lot better than most of Norwich's offers in that area of the pitch. Hull today were without 6, 7, 8 frontline players. Teams in this league do get injuries, but it's like you say, probably the extent, and again, it's the fact that we're talking multi-seasons. We're not talking about a one-off kind of situation here.
No. I mean, it's clearly a factor. It's clearly a factor if you recruit a Matthijs Kvistgaard and you recruit a Papagiello and they're both unavailable for that very key part of a new manager coming in, trying to inject some momentum, go forward while putting the processes in place. You absolutely need your best players available. But it's definitely not an excuse because, as you rightly say, you know, around the Championship, respective coaches are managing the same issues he has, and you can debate the scale of each club's own injury issues. But it's still very much, for me, there's no free pass here for Liam Manning. You know, this far in, the structure, the as I say, the lack of creativity, the sense of Sargent's growing isolation, although he had one or two chances, notably a very good one early on today. But the continued kind of brittleness in terms of defensively, individually and collectively, you know, all of those are at Liam Manning's door, and it's not enough to, as I say, you know, absolve him of any real scrutiny because he's missing one or two key players, or maybe more than one or two. But, you know, it is obviously, if Marco Attanasio is informing us that there's been an outside audit done and at Norwich are not coming back in a very favourable light, then that suggests that while every other Championship club are navigating the same issues around player health, you know, something isn't happening at Norwich to ensure that they're not even in that spectrum of what their other Championship rivals are, that they're actually performing worse in those areas. And as a result, you know, it is Liam Manning, unfortunately, bears the brunt of that because he has so many player unavailabilities. And, you know. So, but where you put the measure, whether you know that's enough to say, well, you know, what do you expect in terms of Liam Manning? No, I don't agree with that. Not this far into a season, where they still have a very deep squad, because they didn't shift huge numbers out the door. Really, they brought 12 in. They didn't shift huge numbers. They've retained quite a lot on the books. So, you know, and I think the feeling internally all through this period with injuries is that, well, Liam's got enough options. It's up to him now to find solutions. That's what he was brought in on a ticket of. Ben Napper said when he was unveiled, this guy gets more out of the existing resource he's been given. He's shown that at every previous club.
It's quite worrying if that's the case here, isn't it?
It's not happened here, has it? So,
no.
So if that is the case, then, you know, we should have seen that by now, I think, and that hasn't been the case. And if anything, you would say now this last period of games, you know, the six defeats, it's regressing from where it was at the start of the season, which was far from perfect, and you still had the anomaly between away results and performance and home results and performance, but they're actually better at the start of the season than they are now. And, you know, if that did for Johannes, then, yeah, you know, why is the same sporting director applying different criteria at this stage? Probably because he knows if Liam Manning departs, he'll be away in short order after him.
Yes, and for me as well, I think the idea that because Liam has had 250 games in English football and has a deep understanding of English football, that's enough, I find that quite hard. I mean, I made this point to you. You go back through the last few promotion-winning managers that Norwich have had. Well, Daniel Farke, prior to coming to Norwich, had no English experience at all. Alex Neil, when he came from Hamilton, didn't have any English experience at all. British, granted, but not English. Paul Lambert had some in terms of Wickham and Colchester, but that was at a lower level than Norwich were at championship-wise and definitely Premier League-wise when he was here. Nigel Worthington, obviously Northern Ireland, Irish and had a bit more of that experience, but you wouldn't say, you know, he managed 200 odd games in the championship before he arrived at the club. So I think this idea that just because you've got experience that translates into results and quality, I think that's maybe sometimes over-egged in football with coaches. You look at the top of the championship at the moment. I mean, Frank Lampard, clearly Rob Edwards as well. There are some experienced operators up there. And I think Rob Edwards is maybe a case in point in terms of a good coach can do badly at a club and still be a good coach at the end of it. And that maybe feels where it's at in terms of Liam Manning. So, yeah, that's an interesting point worth making. Norwich play again on Wednesday, Paddy. It's against crisis-stricken Sheffield Wednesday, albeit rejuvenated. I think they've nearly sold out Hillsborough. Obviously, administrators have gone in there trying to raise cash to keep that club alive. Remarkably, that feels to be the case, and yet their fan base and their football club feels more together and more united than where Norwich City are at this moment in time. What needs to, well, firstly, do you think anything will change before that game? And secondly, how on earth do Norwich go about getting a result at this moment in time?
You just can't really say, as we sit here, whatever it is now, 6 o'clock on Saturday evening.
6 o'clock.
There you go.
Just now.
There you go. Do you want to do the bongs? You can't really say, as we sit here, Connor, but, you know, there was reports, not confirmed, that Napper and Manning left in the same vehicle, maybe because they couldn't get out because of the fans who were blocking the exit from the South Stand car park. But, you know, is there some significance to that? I don't know. Because, you know, we go back to what one of the many sound bites from Mark the other day was, like, Ben needs Liam and Liam needs Ben. They are inexplicably linked now, inexplicably. So, you know, You can't really sit here definitively and say between now and Sheffield Wednesday there'll be no reaction, because we don't obviously know how this has been digested over the water. Clearly, we know they were watching the game. We know they were texting during the game again, various club personnel. So they will be well aware, I'm sure, as Mark was at pains to point out, that they understand, even with the benefit of distance, you know, what has gone on today and whether that will alter their mindset. Hard to say. But on the other point, you know, you cannot see any way that this Norwich go to Hillsborough and against a club who feel like those fans have got their club back. Now Chanziri's been, you know, jettisoned, albeit they're in administration, and it looks like League One beckons for them. But the reaction subsequently since his departure would suggest that there is a real energised optimism around that club, massive fan base at this level, been in the doldrums far too long. And you will know they will be bang up for it, because I think Pedersen was even talking up just off the back of losing 12, or being deducted 12 points. No, don't write us off, we can still pull this round.
Got a point at West Brom today.
Exactly. Well, you can guarantee they'll be earmarking another three when Norwich roll in. And it, as a result, any adversity that this group of players will inevitably face at Hillsborough in that environment, they'll fold. They'll fold again, because we've seen it. That is their default. And if that is the case, then it's hard to say. Hard to see how we limp on again to Leicester with Ben Napper in charge, with Liam Manning in charge, with the same group of underperforming players expected to go out and perform, and at the eighth time of asking, get some points on the board at Carrow Road against a Leicester team who came down last season and are struggling a little bit, but still have enough quality to punish this rabble. Dare I choose my words advisedly? So yeah, it's hard to feel that it'll be anything more than, as I say, there'll be more negative currents to wade through in the coming days, I fear, if there's no change coming. And as I said, we don't know this close to full time whistle whether this has shifted a dial with Mark Attanasio and his people, but certainly before the game, by dint of what he said publicly, he wasn't of a mind to dismiss Ben Napper or Liam Manning. So, we have to ultimately see when will the tipping point be reached for him. I went back to Liam post-match today when he talked about, well, there will be further discussions, and he's probably stating the obvious there. Of course there will have to be further discussions, because this isn't acceptable. It needs to change, top to bottom of that football club. Of course they will have to discuss and dissect and analyse this latest defeat. But when I went back to him and said, well, is that, without giving us or breaking any confidences, was there almost a timeline to Mark's private chats with Liam Manning in the last few days? And it was an answer along the lines of, well, of course, he's made it quite clear this cannot go on. So I guess we're all in this.
It can.
It cannot go on. No, it cannot go on. It surely can't. Not today, after today, surely. But that's where we are now. We're in this almost holding pattern of, what point is the tipping point for Mark Attanasio? Because he is, when all's said and done, the person who will make the final decisions on these key personnel and the people who are in it currently and whether they continue. But, I think Liam Manning, if you got him in a quiet moment, would probably admit that he's maybe surprised that, as bad as things are, that he's still in post, because he knows he's been around the block. You talked about how many games he's got in English football. He knows that this is becoming quite unusual, that such a systemic failure hasn't resulted in the departure of key personnel, particularly when Ben Napper was very quick to dismiss Yanis off Torup, in terms of when the decision was made, they went for it over that Easter period. But again, maybe that is a reflection of, if Liam goes, where does that leave Ben Napper? It's got to be an untenable position, surely, then, to blow up a second head coach experiment in the space of 6 months or whatever it would be. So, maybe that is the only thing that at the moment is keeping these gentlemen in post. That and the fact that Mark Attanasio seems minded, at least pre-today's game, to afford them more time. But, the graphic nature of the events today, I think, in terms of, that was a fan base who were furious by the end of that game. And again, not just maybe the usual constituencies you would expect to be a bit more reactionary. No, this was much broader, much deeper in terms of the demographic you sensed in the stadium. It's not cooked up on social media. This was people who pay their hard-earned and have loyally shown year in, year out that support for their football club. They've had enough as well. En masse, you can debate, where the percentage is, but I think it's safe to say it's in the majority and escalating by each dire performance and result. So, I'll throw it on back to you. Do you think there'll be changes made this side of Hillsborough?
No, I don't. I hope, maybe I'll be corrected on that, but I'd be surprised. I think it's going to be very difficult off the back of what Mark Attanasio said just 4 days ago to then blow it up for the reasons that you said as well, in terms of how the Napa Manning situation is so interlinked, is very, very difficult for everyone, I think, in terms of how that plays out, because ultimately we know how it works typically at Norwich City. The sporting director goes to the owner, says, look, we need to make a change. That was the case with Stuart Webber as well, when he went when he wanted to get rid of Daniel Farker. He went to see Delia at her house, and that was the way it worked then. It's the way it worked with Torup as well, in terms of the phone was picked up and Napa said, look, I'm thinking of doing this. I don't know, is that going to happen if the ramifications are, I mean, you're effectively sacrificing yourself then, aren't you? Is Ben Napa willing to do that? Is he going to be in a position to do that? I don't know. Is there a situation where both of them hold their hands up and say, look, do you know what? We've given it a go. We've tried. We just can't do it. And walk away from it. Again, that's increasingly rare in football that you see that, because of the money that is involved. Absolutely. And people have contracts and families, and they're well within their rights to obviously see those things out. So, yeah, it's incredibly difficult. I think for me today felt like previously, where Norwich have been well cut adrift in the Premier League, and it's been about April time, and there's just almost an air of acceptance about the whole thing. And that for me is the most dangerous aspect of this. And I think that would be the point, not that they need to make any points to them, but the point I would make to Mark Attanasio, in that you do not want this on your CV. This is not in your plan to get relegated, to go down to League One. It is a disaster for this football club to be even in this conversation, really, to go down. But they are in it. It's where they are. And so something needs to change and be done about it. And I think now we've been at this stage for a few weeks where inaction and doing nothing is a decision. And that is a decision that costs football clubs, that inertia, that you often see in relegated football clubs. Look at Luton last season, look at Sunderland, look at Birmingham, look at Ipswich Town in years gone by, who have all been in similar positions. Something has to be done, and it has to be done quickly, I think. If not, suddenly you're in December and it's Christmas and you're in this mess, and then you're in January and then you're in February, and then you really are firefighting and your games are running out and it all gets a bit desperate. They're at a stage now where something can change, something can be done about it. And I think we've reached the point where that has to happen. If it's not going to be driven from inside the football club, it has to be driven from people in stateside who need to see where this is at and look at what's played out today. Because if not, it feels like this is going to get a hell of a lot worse before it gets better. And clearly, look, you've got an international break coming up as well. That's the last one until March. That's the last kind of natural window you have to try and change some things. Kind of feels like it's got to be pretty soon. If not, the waters could get even rockier, I think, and that is my fear. We will, of course, bring you anything that happens or not. Pinken.com, the place to go as it stands. We will be speaking to Liam Manning early part of next week, ahead of that game against Sheffield Wednesday, on Wednesday at Hillsborough, before obviously the Carroll Road return against Leicester on Saturday. Goodness me, folks. See you soon.